A whole lot to talk about today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and phones are open for your Jewish questions.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So last week, on our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast, I was en route to England, and or just arrived in England, and we played for you a recording we had done in Jerusalem, my interview with Rabbi Harry Rosenberg about the lost tribes of Israel. It is getting a lot of attention on our Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel, and I want to talk to you briefly about that today, as well as my interview with Pastor Andy Stanley from a week ago Monday. And if you've got questions, if you've got some things you'd like to raise to me, feedback about either of those interviews, questions, challenges, give me a call, 866-348-7884. Also, any Jewish-related question of any kind, be it Hebrew, be it related to rabbinic tradition, be it related to Israel today, be it related to Yeshua being the Messiah of Israel. If it's a Jewish-related question, give me a call, 866-348-7884. If you want to ask me about Sabbath observance or dietary laws, we've discussed those things so many times, we'll just refer you to our Ask Dr. Brown digital library. But otherwise, phone lines are open. Once more, 866-348-7884. The earlier you call in the program, the better chance I have of answering your question. Okay, so while we were in Jerusalem, I was back in our hotel. This was, the day after I had been detained by police after complaints from a counter-missionary that was harassing me. And I was back in the hotel, and it was maybe 2 days after this. So now it's the end of Sabbath, so it's Saturday night. I took a walk, praying, walking around Jerusalem, and then so my team was out and met this gentleman, Harry Rosenberg, Orthodox Jewish rabbi, who has some very interesting ideas in terms of world order and peace and stuff like that, which is totally a separate subject and one that's the least of my concerns right now. But he has been studying for years the identity of different groups around the world that he believes could trace back to lost tribes of Israel or to Jewish people who under duress had to convert at least outwardly to Catholicism or Islam and have continued to live as Jews? And is it true that many Palestinians actually are Jews who under pressure converted to Islam and have been living as Muslims but actually have Jewish roots? So we had a fascinating discussion. And during our discussion, he brought up some things I had never heard before. You know, about the Shinto religion, founder of Shinto religion in Japan and potential connection to the lost tribes of Israel, and gave me more information about the Pashtun people in Afghanistan and more information about different groups within Africa that would identify as having Israelite roots. A lot of the stuff I had heard before, much I had not heard in this detail. Some was completely new to me. So we did the interview to get information out. Now, interestingly, it's getting all kinds of backlash on the Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel. On the one hand, you have people saying, see, we've been telling you this all along. You have others saying, Jews, white Jews like Brown, they're not really Jews at all. They're the synagogue of Satan. One man misspelled it as synagogue of Satan, but I didn't take time to correct his typo. Others have said, yeah, the fact is all real Jews are black and Jesus was black. And then every different position, and others saying, no, the Jewish people today that we identify as Jews, those are the only ones who are really Jews. These others are bogus. They're not really Israelite. All that to say, it's fascinating. There is a lot to discuss. What is clear to me is that, A, we know that the Bible talks about the reunification of the tribes of Israel and Judah at the end of the age. And it seems to me to be more than just a spiritual promise. B, we know within those who identify as Jewish people today and have historically, and the ones that Hitler sought to wipe out and the ones that God brought back to the land of Israel, that among us, all 12 tribes are represented. The book of Acts, Paul talks about the 12 tribes serving God to this day. Jacob, James, the chapter, first chapter begins with greetings to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. So that would mean the Jewish people scattered abroad, and presumably Jewish believers scattered abroad who made up representatives of the 12 tribes. That seems clear to me. It also seems clear to me that some of those that were once part of Israel, 10 lost tribes, have been lost. That they've been completely destroyed, either killed, assimilated, beyond restoration. And that, what are we, D, A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, 4, that there are different groups of people who for many, many centuries have preserved aspects of Jewish practice, Jewish law, Jewish tradition. Some of them have practices that vary with the practices of Rabbinic Judaism. Rabbinic Judaism would say that's because your practices are defective and you've forgotten many of the key things that we passed on by tradition. And they would rebut and say, no, your traditions come later. So all those things are being discussed. But it does seem clear that there are different groups who have been providentially preserved by God, who somehow tie back to the lost tribes of Israel. And it will be interesting to see how these things get sorted out at the end. Now, before I go to your calls, let me also say this. When we were talking about millions here, millions there, my interview with Harry Rosenberg, again, if you missed it, you can just go to our digital library and AskDrBrown.org or just our YouTube channel, just search for that, Lost Tribes at AskDrBrown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on YouTube. But let me just say this. I was asking, well, how many people potentially are you talking about? And I was expecting, you know, tens of millions, maybe 100 million, you know, whatever the number. And he said, could be 1 billion people. So, I mean, who knows actually? God knows. But these things will be sorted out in the days ahead. And there'll be massive controversy over what it means to be a Jew and over the definition of Israel. So just prepare for that and prepare for a steady attack on those who are truly Jews being attacked as not being Jews at all. Watch for that. 866-34-TRUTH. And we go to the phones starting in Podger in Las Vegas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I'm a big fan of your work. And I saw the interview with Rabbi Rosenberg last week with great interest. I actually thought the discussion about the lost tribes is fascinating and something that I'd welcome. I mean, if anything, it would certainly kind of put to bed the idea that Judaism / Zionism is racism if it could be proven demonstrably that, you know, the tribes of Israel are made of different races. My concern was, and I left a rather impassioned comment under the video on YouTube last week, was what came next when Rabbi Rosenberg kind of went on to talk about what, unfortunately, you know, with the growing sort of rise of anti-Semitism among Christian truthers, and just so you know, I'm a born-again believer married to an Israeli Jew, so I have skin in the game. I love Jews and I love Israel. But he kind of went on to basically kind of give an outline of precisely what the anti-Israel Christian truthers claim of the plans for a Jewish New World Order. it was very concerning. My heart sank, and I just thought, you are absolutely playing into a lot of anti-Semites' hands at this moment, and if this interview gets out, it's going to be a disaster for Christian-Jewish relations. So I just wanted to get your thoughts about that, because to me, what he was talking about sounded like, you know, there was going to be sort of, he was talking about shoring up Jewish power overseas and kind of taking over their institutions and basically, you know, nations losing sovereignty and coming under a one world order. It sounded really bad.
We had two things going on. We had the question about identity of lost tribes of Israel, controversial subject with different scholars and researchers weighing in with different viewpoints, different historians, anthropologists weighing in with different viewpoints. You had that. And then you had Rabbi Harry's own personal beliefs and viewpoints and how to better the world and how we can all play a role in the Messianic age, etc. And some of those things came up right at the end, and then my producer Matt went out to have a meal with him afterwards, and Matt came back saying, oh, he's got a whole lot of really interesting, to me, way out ideas beyond what we talked about. So when things came up in that context, when they came up that quickly, just like our profound differences about who Yeshua is and things like that, or views of Jewish mysticism, I just passed those by for the most part. And I think in terms of looking at some of the comments coming in, I haven't read all of them, but looking at the comments that have come in, the main focus seems to be where we were putting it on the alleged identity of these various lost tribes or hidden Jews or things like that. So he is definitely, in that sense, in a very fringe group. Very, very religious Jews don't think the same way that he does. Their goal is not to take over this institution, that, but rather to be faithful to Judaism and Torah observance and thereby bring light to the world and bring in the redemption and the Messianic era. So the other thing I would say is that I think his viewpoint is a bit more egalitarian than you might realize, meaning that he's looking for humanity as a whole to rise up. So, of course, we profoundly differ over that. But I understand your fear. Protocols of the Elders of Zion and the 300 secret Jews hidden around the world, you know, cabal that are going to rise up and take over the whole world, and what he said could play into it. Yeah, but here's the comfort for you, and it's an ironic one. Anti-Semites don't need any evidence because anti-Semitism is just based on lie after lie and exaggeration after exaggeration. But blessings to you and to your Israeli Jewish husband. Great question, and thank you for your interest. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. Phone lines are jammed, but keep calling. You'll be able to get through as soon as a caller drops out. I want to get to as many calls as I can. That's my main agenda, to get to your calls. I felt very good about the interview with Pastor Andy Stanley, recognizing where he's coming from, what his goals are, and having interacted with him enough now, understanding what he believes in terms of the authority of Scripture, and then definitely having some different approaches and areas where we'll keep fellowshipping and interacting about the Jewish people in Israel and the role of all this in God's plan and how it applies to the whole church. But the comments that I've seen on our YouTube channel posted to the interview there have been decidedly negative. Decidedly negative. Of course, those just write him off as a heretic. That's one thing. But I found that interesting. So I'd love to hear your feedback as well. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I forgot the music was coming there. Thank you for playing it, gentlemen. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. So this is going to sound odd, but I just started writing an article. The idea hit me driving up to the office today. So right before radio, and actually literally during this two-minute break, I've been writing what Christian leaders could learn from Donald Trump. Yep, what Christian leaders could learn from Donald Trump. Now I'm starting off with a list of what Christian leaders cannot learn from President Trump. So that could be a pretty long list. But there are things that followers of Jesus, especially leaders, could learn from the president. So look for that article coming out soon. 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to Jacob in Battle Creek. Hang on. Battle Creek. Where is Battle Creek? What state, Jacob?
This is in Michigan.
Battle Creek, Michigan. All right. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. I recently discovered you on YouTube about 2 weeks ago, debating Dr. White, and I've been trying to get as much information about Christianity as possible. I'm recently baptized into the body of Christ, disciple of Jesus Christ, about a year now, and so just trying to soak up the gospel.
Wonderful. But,
what I wanted to ask you about was I seen the video that you referred to with Rabbi Harry there, mm-hmm. and I was curious if the genealogy, if it's possible that the genealogy of all humanity has kind of gathered from, has extended from Abraham. So somehow we all go back to Abraham. And how would that play into the end time situation with genetic scientists and, like Rabbi Harry was saying, some of the genetics now are showing that these different tribes and different people from all around the world are part of the Israeli nation.
Yeah, so number one, genealogically, historically, the vast majority of people do not descend from Abraham, and in particular from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but from Abraham. There are many millions who do, and spiritually, all followers of Jesus, all those who are born again in the Messiah, like you, like me, regardless of our ethnicity or our background, we are children of Abraham by faith. So in that sense, he is the father of hundreds of millions, billions potentially, who are followers of Jesus and who are children of Abraham by faith. But genealogically, genetically, historically, no, there are many non-Abrahamic peoples. And Rabbi Harry would be the first to tell you that the vast majority of people on the earth don't go back to Abraham, cannot be traced back to Abraham. Even if one was believing his figure of, you know, hundreds of millions or a billion, which to me is way, way, way high and hard to support, the fact is that would mean that the other 6.5 billion are not children of Abraham or related to Israel. So it's an interesting question, sir, but actually, no, historically, even just reading scripture, you can see all these people groups that were not part of Abraham and other people groups that are equally ancient, you know, the civilizations in China and India that are not related, that develop in other parts of the world along with the time that the descendants of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob are developing. So certainly not, but children of Abraham by faith, that becomes multiplied hundreds and hundreds of millions because of the work of Jesus the Messiah. Hey, Jacob, thanks for the call and welcome to the family of God. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jacob in Kentucky. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Michael Brown. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You got your radio turned down there?
Hey, guys, can you turn that down? Sorry about that. I'm in the car with my parents.
All right. Well, honor your parents, and as long as they're good with the call, let's do it. Go ahead, sir.
All right. So I was reading a reader of ancient Near Eastern texts by Michael D. Coogan, and I was reading the myth of Horus and Seth, and I saw something that looks very familiar in the Hebrew Bible to 2 Samuel 12. A similar illustration is used where someone tells a fake story to a guilty party, mm-hmm. and the guilty party condemns the person in the fake story in order that the person telling the story can then condemn him by basically condemning himself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was wondering what the purpose, if you do believe that this is some sort of parallel, and what the purpose of the parallel would be if it is a parallel.
Yeah, I don't look at it as a parallel. First, that's a great source. Coogan's a great ancient Near Eastern scholar and Old Testament scholar. But no, I would not look at that as a parable any more than if a parent today uses a story like that to elicit a response from a child. In other words, this just shows that this is something that was not unknown or uncommon. But there are certain things that are so common. There are certain things that are so culturally appropriate or that work across cultures. I'm sure you could find cultures all around the world, 100% unrelated to ancient Israel, where they have similar examples like this, where someone tells a fake story to elicit a certain response of condemnation, which then condemns the one giving that answer. And again, I think of that as parents doing that with children. I think of something my father did with me as a child, where it's kind of a reverse scenario, but he was trying to illustrate something to get me to wake up to something, and told a story that made him look bad, which was not true, but he was trying to wake me up to something. So when he was a child, etc. So anyway, no, it's to have parallels where there's some clear literary borrowing, you need a whole lot more points in common than this. So if someone just references, hey, this is similar to this, yeah, that's all it is. And again, you could find probably go into Buddhist literature, go into Islamic literature, go into Hindu literature, go into folklore from American Indians, and you'll probably find similar parallels there, if that makes sense to you. It's just a broad-based thing that could happen in any kind of culture.
All right, yeah, thank you. That clears a whole lot up.
Great, awesome, Jack. By the way, there is something that the Jewish scholar Samuel Sandel wrote about decades ago, late Jewish scholar, Reform Jewish scholar, called parallelomania, where everything becomes a parallel. And you have to be careful with that. You know, sometimes you'll have it in New Testament studies where we'll say, well, this parallels the saying in the Babylonian Talmud. Yeah, that's true, but that saying is from a sage who lived 400 years after Jesus in another country. So in what sense is it a parallel? Or we've got all these ancient Near Eastern parallels. Yes, the Bible talks about silver and gold and without number, and this talks about, or without measure, and this text talks about silver and gold without measure. That's like saying this bank had a lot of money, that bank had a lot of money. So true parallels are striking and fascinating and very interesting. And wow, why did the Bible use the exact same language as you find in this ancient Near Eastern myth? Ah, it's to set the record straight, to say, no, it wasn't Baal, who triumphed over Leviathan. It was Yahweh who triumphed over the powers of chaos. So the real parallels are fascinating. Hey, thank you for the literate question, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to CJ in Boise, Idaho. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. excuse me. So I was actually curious on a situation as it pertains to the state of Israel. I've been very up to American Jewish politics for most of my life, and there seems to be a distinct trend that a lot of people would say, for example, Rabbi Meir Kahana would refer to Israel as a junkie to its money. And Congressman Ron Paul would very often claim that he wanted America to stop funding Israel for purposes of Israel's own protection, to make its own decisions. And now in 2017, I'm seeing, you know, there's rumors from Israeli News Live and Stephen Bannon and a lot of other guys, right, saying that Israel is in a position now to where the U.S. can actually dictate whether or not they're going to split up Jerusalem. Some have said they want to actually split it into a West Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, Old City thing, with the Old City being internationalized, and possibly the UN's there, possibly the Vatican, and, you know, a few others have been suggested. But it seems like a very legitimate problem now that, you know, maybe Israel actually is having that money held over its head, and I just want to know if you think that might have anything to do with any sort of coming developments as far as end time and eschatology are concerned.
Yep. Hey, one announcement for you, though. I do want to bring up to date on one thing. It's actually 2018, as far as I know, not 2017. So we'll jump ahead on that.
Sorry,
yeah, that's right. Trust me, I have to ask myself many times what date, month, even year it is. But anyway, number one, of course, Rabbi Meir Kahana represented an extreme view, even within Israel. He was ultimately assassinated. And Ron Paul, this would be part of his larger libertarian views and non-involvement in certain ways with international affairs. That being said, there's no question that for many years, America has been able to put Israel under pressure. Many believe Israel would not have withdrawn from Gaza if not for American pressure. One of my Israeli friends told me decades ago, he said, American pretty much sit down and say, this is the way it's going to be. And Israel only has so much say in it. Now, on the one hand, America, for the most part, has been a very good ally of Israel, and even more so now with President Trump. On the other hand, how much is Israel being dictated to by America? That's a fair question. How will it tie in with end times? In my view, it has more to do with the fate of America than the fate of Israel. In other words, if America gets on the wrong side of God's plans for Israel, that's going to hurt America more than Israel. So even though it seems as if Israel is heavily dependent on America, you can turn it around and say that if America mistreats Israel and deals wrongly with Israel, that America will come out on the short end of the stick rather than Israel. At least that's my view. Thank you, sir, for a great question. Much appreciated. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast on the Line of Fire with your thoroughly Jewish host, Michael Brown. Thanks for joining us. Here's the number to call as we focus on your calls today, 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. My interview a week ago Monday with Pastor Andy Stanley was, at his suggestion, coming on the show with me to clarify comments he had made regarding, quote, unhitching from the Old Testament. And as we talked, he agreed it would have been better to say things differently. He agreed that the point he was seeking to make was simply that just as first century Jewish believers in Jesus had certain misconceptions, certain traditions, certain ideas that got in the way of their receiving the message of Jesus Yeshua, which was a message not just for the Jewish people, but for all people, that we too sometimes have to get rid of misconceptions, wrong ideas, traditional thinking that is contrary to the Word of God and the purpose of God. That being said, we definitely had different approaches, different perspectives on certain things. Pastor Stanley contacted me afterwards, said he watched the interview, found it fair, felt good about it. If you have questions or comments about it, if you like what he said and think it clarified, if the waters are still muddied for you, if you didn't like what he said, phones are open, but any Jewish-related question at all, 866-348-7884. Let us go straight to the phones to Todd in Seagrove, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I've got a question here that may be a bit unusual, but it's concerning the naming of children in ancient Israel. I noticed somewhat of a parallel between the account of the birth of Obed, who was Boaz and Ruth's son, comparing that to the birth of John the Baptist. And it seems that the family members seem to have quite a bit of influence about the naming of the child, just from what I'm reading in the scripture. And I was just calling to find out if what my understanding is correct, or I'm just misunderstanding something.
Yeah, so the first thing is, when you're talking about through the Bible, you're talking about a period of a couple thousand years, say from Abraham to Jesus. So you go back to Noah, you go back to Adam, you're talking thousands of years before that. So you're talking a long history in which lots of customs changed. Some stayed the same, some changed. So there was no specific rule, and human nature being what it is, you can know that in certain contexts, these were really family decisions, or in some, the weight went to the father, or the weight went to the mother, or there was the tradition that you had to name every other generation a certain way, or every generation a certain way. You know, in some homes, it's just the custom, you're a junior, then your kid is the third, and the one after is the fourth, and you keep going every time you have a boy to carry on the name and the line. Among Talmudic rabbis, there is a tradition that you wouldn't name your son after the father, but you could do it after the grandfather. So that would be every other generation that name would repeat. But otherwise, sir, I don't believe there were specific guidelines that were followed or any particular custom that was the custom through the Bible that this was how a child was named. You're just talking too long a period of time. So to look at, say, someone born before the year 1000, That would be David's ancestor, Obed, that we're talking about. So that would be before the year 1000. And then someone born 1,000 years later, and to think that there was the same custom prevailing, that would be unlikely. Possible, but unlikely. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. I appreciate the question. Let's go to Massachusetts. John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Is there any truth to the claim that some American Indians are descended from the lost 10 tribes of Israel, as they refer to it? For example,
okay.
I've heard the Cherokees say that they're from the tribe of Issachar, for example.
Right, and Mormons have tried to argue in that direction as well. And then there are alleged Hebrew inscriptions that were found that go back hundreds of years in America. How is that the case? To my knowledge, DNA studies have rebutted this. And this has been a blow to some Mormons. In fact, it caused some Mormons to actually leave the Mormon church when they realized that factually, historically, these things were not true. As for some of the Hebrew inscriptions, some of them have found or are alleged to be forgeries that someone wrote something inside of a cave, tried to make it look ancient, and then sometime later, quote, discovered it as proofs. So, look, there are lots of things that are possible. It's possible that there was travel to America long before Columbus, and that that ties in with the Native Americans, and that's how they got to this continent. And did they use Hebrew? There's just no evidence of that, to my knowledge. So while the question is, are there scattered remnants of the lost tribes of Israel around the world? Will we find them in surprising places? Yes, that seems to be the case. Are there those whose Jewish identity was hidden for various reasons and yet customs preserved among the descendants? Yes, that seems to be the case. But to my knowledge, there is no evidence that the Native Americans, American Indians, are actually lost tribes of Israel. That's one. And two, the alleged Hebrew inscriptions, from what I can tell, are either later or forgeries, and therefore not to be traced back to alleged tribes coming. And some try to put it way, way, way back, because the script being used would put it back over 2,000 years. So to the best of my knowledge, the answer is no. I'm open for all kinds of surprises. You know what I'm saying? I'm not dogmatic in saying this couldn't happen here, this couldn't happen there. But just like the whole British Israelite theory, these are myths. These are things that get twisted, that get exaggerated, that become followed in cult-like ways that are simply to be rejected. All right, thank you for the question. 866-348-7884. As always, if you're able to get through in whole, that's the best way we have of getting to your questions. Phone lines have been jammed. Just a couple lines open up now, so it's a great time to call if you'd like to try to get in. We go to Carrie in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well.
Good. You have a great show, by the way. I love your show.
Well, thank you, sir.
So my question is this, is that, you know, Israel was in Egypt for 430 years before Moses took them out. So my question is, do they have dual citizenship with Egypt because they were all born in Egypt? How does that work?
No. That's ancient history.
Okay.
And, some claim that they're due reparations for all their years of slavery there and things like that.
Right.
But no, you're dealing with ancient Egypt and ancient Israel, and then the scattering of the Jewish people around the world, and then the restoration of the modern state of Israel in 1948. So with that, no, this is, you have a modern state of Israel that has citizenship. There wouldn't have been a concept of dual citizenship in the ancient world the way we have it today. You didn't need passports to get across borders and things like that. It's a very interesting question in light of immigration issues today, but certainly not. And until a peace treaty was signed with Egypt, there was hostility. You know, Nasser wanted to destroy Israel and was a real enemy of Israel. And then Anwar Sadat, of course, signed the peace treaty with Israel. And there you could have, you know, tourism exchange and things back and forth like that and working together. But by and large, there's still a lot of hostility towards the Jewish people and towards Israel and Egypt. I've seen some video clips of songs, you know, it could be like an Egyptian rap song attacking Israel, or really ugly ways, or TV series that play into ancient anti-Semitic libels, lies about the Jewish people being watched widely on Egyptian TV. There is an Egyptian actor, and he's appearing on a show where they trick him to say that this is actually Israeli-sponsored show, etc., and that he's being set up, and he actually gets violent. I mean, he's furious, and he hits people. I mean, it's wild. And then they have to calm him down, tell him the whole thing was just a joke. The whole thing was just a joke. So while there are some within Egypt that have good relations with Israel, and while there are believers in Egypt that work with believers in Israel, overall, Israel being part of the larger Muslim Arab world is still hostile to Israel. Hey, thank you for the question. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Steve in Charlotte. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, if you want me to turn my speaker off, let me know. But I have to, I'm not familiar with this name. Jodel Anstott, she wrote a book called Yahweh Exists.
All right, hang on. Let me get the title of the book is Yahweh Exists.
YHWH Exists.
Yep.
And
yep.
The author is Jodel, J-O-D-E-L-L, Anstott, O-N-S-T-O-T-T.
And all right, hang on. Just looking at it here, Yahweh Exists, Volume 1, Jodel Anstott, the Scripture, Myth or Truth, Literature or History. So this is a woman, and let's just see who published this. Emmanuel Academic. All right, Social, Biblical, and Historical Research Specialist has authored 5 books, and the book has 67 reviews. Okay, the deal is, it would appear to be a serious book, and let me just look to see here on the cover. Look more closely to make sure that they make sure they spell the Hebrew properly. Just looking there, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about the author. I don't know anything about the book. But tell you what, let's look at the table of contents here. Have you read it?
No. I just found out about 30 minutes ago from a pastor who I follow, and he's very concerned because hidden inside all the history is a teaching that Christians must follow Tanakh. And he said that she's on local Christian radio because of her conservative views. Mm-hmm. The local Christian radio is hosting her, and he said it's also sweeping the Christian bookstores.
Interesting. Well, I'll tell you what, I've got to look into it, Steve. This is the first I've heard of it. Let me look into it, and then I'll give you a response. All right, let's be fair to her and the book. Let me look into it, and I'll give you a response. Thank you.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884, number to call. Hey, every Wednesday night, we are doing a Jewish outreach show that blankets New York City. It's once a week. It's Wednesday from 9 to 10 or 9 to 9:55 Eastern Standard Time. And we also do a live stream. Now, this is different than our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We're just digging into issues about Jesus being the Messiah. And every week we're opening up the weekly Torah portion, looking for messianic insights into the Torah portion as we do. And then specifically taking calls that have to do with Jesus being the Messiah, messianic prophecy. And as we're on more and more, we're trusting we'll get calls from Jewish listeners in New York, religious Jews, and others. We're doing a live stream on Facebook and on YouTube. So Wednesday nights, 9 to 10, you don't want to miss it. If you like Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, you'll love our Wednesday night Real Messiah broadcast. Last night in the weekly Torah portion, we came to the end of Numbers and talked about the atoning power of the death of the high priest. So, 866-34-TRUTH, number to call today. But to watch the show from last night and the previous weeks, it's archived on our Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel, or you can watch it on the digital library on AskDrBrown.org. So Steve from Charlotte asking about Jodl Onstott. There are plenty of folks who've written a lot, who've spoken a lot that I don't know. It's a big world out there. So the fact that I don't know her work is no slight on her. She may have no idea who I am. It's no slight on me. So just looking at her website, it's interesting that books that she's talking about reading, there's some books from Michael Farris, who's the head of the Alliance Defending Freedom, organization with which we work closely, Corrie ten Boom's The Hiding Place. So just interesting books that are listed there. But again, I'll look into this Yahweh Exists book so I can give you an intelligent, informed answer. We go to Birmingham, Alabama. Heath, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Brown?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Okay, so I'll give you, I have a quick question about Galatians 2:14, but I'll give you the background to what prompts my question to kind of give you some context.
And by the way, as you're doing that, of course, I'm familiar with the passage, but I just got sent to me Craig Keener's recent commentary that came out on Galatians. So as you are sharing that with me, I'm going to turn to his commentary as well. So go ahead. Back to you.
Sure. Okay, so my question kind of deals with, I've been reading about one law theology and Gentiles that feel like we should follow all of Torah, or at least
yep.
do the best we can, kind of the Tim Haig type stuff.
Yep.
But one of my stumbling blocks is, I think the verse is Galatians 2:14, where the Peter and Paul confrontation happened.
Yep.
And I think Paul specifically tells Peter, you know, you live like a Gentile and not
yep.
like a Jew. And the context is him eating with Gentiles and things like
yep.
that. So is that kind of Peter or Paul saying to Peter, you know, you're eating non-kosher foods when you're eating with the Gentiles and you're actually living like a Gentile and you're not following Torah anymore? Or is there some other way to view that? Or I'm just kind of wondering what Paul
right,
is getting at in that verse.
So let's break things down. First, Paul rebukes Peter. And what was happening with the Galatians? The Galatians were Gentile believers who were being put under pressure to observe the Torah of Moses, and who were told that in order to be justified, they had to observe the Torah of Moses. Now, the one law people would say, no, this is not for justification, but this is for obedience. Nonetheless, I wholeheartedly differ with the one law camp that says that all Christians today should seek to live by the dictates of the Sinai covenant, forgiven by the blood of the cross, but yet all Christians should observe the dietary laws, the biblical holidays, and if they don't, they're somehow disobedience or not in perfect obedience. I wholeheartedly reject that for many, many reasons. But let's break this down. We know that Paul circumcised Timothy, Acts 16. And there was uncertainty, Jewish mother, Gentile father, was he Jewish or not? There was obviously still debate in the Jewish world. And Paul, to remove any doubt, had him circumcised. But he refused to allow Titus to be circumcised. Why? Because Titus was a Gentile and there was no reason for him to be circumcised. So circumcision was not for Gentiles, that was for Jews. That alone should tell you the one law idea is bogus. Just that alone. Now, I know there are answers from the one law people, and some of them have brilliant theological insights in many other areas, but when it comes to this, I strongly and categorically disagree. So, and that's why Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 7, if you're saved circumcised, don't become uncircumcised. If you're saved uncircumcised, don't become circumcised. So that's telling you again plainly, Jews don't become Gentiles, Gentiles don't become Jews. Just like men don't become women and women don't become men. But when Paul was there in Galatia, there was such pressure to be Jewish and to conform that even Peter got caught up with it. And yet, Paul rebukes him and says this to him. Let's see, I'll read it from the NET. But when I saw that they were not behaving consistently with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas, in front of all of them, Kepha in Hebrew, if you, although you are a Jew, live like a Gentile and do not live like a Jew, how can you try to force the Gentiles to live like Jews? So again, Gentiles are not called to live like Jews. If someone says, well, I find it beautiful, or God must have given the dietary laws for a reason, you're absolutely free to keep them, and you're free to observe the biblical calendar, but you are not obligated to or required to or called to, nor is it a matter of perfect obedience. So what was Peter guilty of? One view would be just like it says, that he was not living like a Jew. He was eating with Gentiles and therefore eating unkosher food, because of which Paul rebuked him. It's like, now when the Judaizers come, or those trying to put these Galatians under pressure to live a certain way, oh, now you're living differently. Oh, I can't eat with the Gentiles now. So you're a hypocrite. And that's why he publicly rebuked him. That's one way of reading it. And that would further confirm that no, Gentiles are not called to live like Jews, and there is liberty for all in the Messiah. The reading that some would give to say, no, Peter always lived like a Jew. What Paul meant was this, and for example, the Complete Jewish Bible, the Stern Translation, puts it like this. I said to Kepha, right in front of everyone, if you who are a Jew live like a Goy and not like a Jew, why are you forcing the Goyim to live like Jews? And David Stern, in his commentary, understands it to mean that this was more internal Jewish rhetoric. Of course Peter kept the dietary laws. We know he did through Acts, the 10th chapter. Of course he kept the dietary laws. But he was breaking with certain traditions, even to sit with Gentiles for a meal. So some of the ultra-religious Jewish traditions he was breaking from. That's how they try to explain it. I don't read it like that. It's possible, but I don't read it like that, with all respect to Dr. Stern. I read it more what seems to be pretty simple. Say, look, these situations, you were sitting with Gentiles, and if that required table fellowship where you ate foods that wouldn't normally be acceptable for a Jew, you were doing it for the sake of the gospel and table fellowship. Now you're trying to pressure Gentiles to live like Jews because these other guys are here with their religious traditions, and Paul rebukes him for that. Let me just say this. I will resist any pressure that's put on Gentiles to live like Jews. I will always resist that. Having said it, there are many, many Gentiles in Messianic congregations. They normally make up the bulk of Messianic congregations, unless it's a heavily Jewish area or, say, in Israel. And they joyfully participate in the Jewish calendar, and they joyfully participate in various cycles of Jewish life, and they find great meaning in it. And they say, why should we take on church traditions when we have biblical laws? Great, wonderful. If that's in your heart to do joyfully before the Lord without coercion, wonderful. But if there's pressure to do it, and you're not perfectly pleasing the Lord if you don't do these things, that I will push against and say that's not from above. That's earthly pressure.
Sure. All right. Well, I think you answered the question. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. And for those that just needed a simple answer, there are a lot of related issues that Heath is raising, and I wanted to address the larger issues and not simply the one specific question. All right. Thank you for the call. With that, we're out of time. Oh, well, not quite out of time. Here, we're not quite out of time. Listen, friends, we have some great projects in the works for reaching out in Israel, some things that can be really, really effective. We're putting a lot of time and energy into developing more videos for Jewish outreach, especially to the religious. We are going to the Jew first and also to the Gentiles. You know, day and night we're addressing cultural issues. Day and night we're going to the nations, raising up, sending out laborers to the nations, contending for revival in the church in America, but bringing the gospel to the Jewish people first. Would you help us do that? Would you stand with us today? We don't talk about money a lot, but your gift right in the middle of this hot summer would be a tremendous encouragement to many and would help us reach many Jewish people. How good is that? Think in eternity when we stand together before the Lord, meeting a Jewish person that got saved through your prayers, meeting a Jewish person that got saved through your generosity. That's the greatest reward I can possibly think of, along with bringing pleasure and joy to the heart of God. So few give to support Jewish ministry. So few are on the front lines of it. Stand with us, partner with us. If we've been a blessing to you spiritually, Paul says, then you can be a blessing in the natural. He writes that in Romans 15. So stand with us. Go to our website right now. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Askdrbrown.org. Click on donate to be a monthly supporter or with your one-time gift. If you'd like to write to us, P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. That's P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. For those joining me in the Leadership Forum tonight, just a few hours from now, we'll be back with you.